This morning, we're going to begin with a trivia question for everyone. What event transpired in the United States on August 21st, 2017? Well, if you don't remember the answer to that, let me give you a hint. It was something like this. How many of us have already forgotten about the eclipse that happened? At school, the science teachers did a big day and all of this and kind of culminated in going out on the baseball field and watching the eclipse. And it was kind of interesting to me that a number of students afterwards were a little let down. In fact, some thought, I thought it'd be a little bit better than this. And as I thought about that, it made a very interesting parallel as we think about light and darkness in the Bible. So many times, darkness, as far as wickedness and sin is concerned, is approached kind of like the excitement of that coming eclipse. It's built up, it's great, it's going to be wonderful. And then when it happens, it's always a letdown. What was thought that was going to be so great turns out to be not so great after all. And when the sun, this time spelling it S-O-N, is covered by the darkness, what we find is that there is always going to be disappointment there. As you and I think about this point, we understand that we live in very dark times. I read a story last week on the news that just disturbed me considerably that kind of led me to thinking about a lesson along these lines. It was a school in California where a boy was deciding which gender he really wanted to be for his life. And the boy decided he wanted to be a girl. That's bad enough. To make matters worse, the teacher of that boy had a gender reveal party for the kids to let them know that he is now a she. And that's bad enough. But I guess what really troubled me about it was a young girl who had been in the class with the boy last year, very innocently called him on the playground, and by his boy name, and was sent to the principal's office for bullying him. I guess if we have to have a silver lining in that story, she did not get in trouble for that. But the parents were irate, as you can imagine. You and I are living in dark times, but we're not the first people. Christians throughout the past 2,000 years have lived in darkness in the sense that the world around them is completely given to those kinds of things. And in order to stay in the light, in order to keep from falling prey to those kinds of things, effort must be made. And so in the book of Galatians, from where we just read, the Apostle Paul lays it flat on the line, and he says there is a choice that's got to be made, and it's between the darkness and the light. And if you choose the darkness, he lists the things you're going to be involved in. And he says if you choose the light, he lists the things you're going to be involved in. But the point that he makes there is that there is no middle ground. And so beginning this morning, and for the next several lessons, I don't know that they'll necessarily be consecutive or not, but for the next several lessons, I want us to really delve into Galatians chapter 5 and to take a look at the works of the flesh in contrast to the fruit of the Spirit, and to understand the choice that you and I have got to make, and to understand that we cannot fall prey to the darkness that surrounds us. So this morning, as we introduce this idea, I want us to talk about the battle that's going on. To look not only at Galatians chapter 5, but several passages that are showing us all of the language that the New Testament writers use to show us the seriousness of this battle that we're approaching, and to understand, first of all, that ground zero in this battle is our soul. This is not something generic. It's not something theoretical. It's not something that's happening in a distant part of the world. It's happening to you and me every day that we are on this earth. The battle is going on for the control of our soul. I want you to note what Peter says as he puts this in very specific terms. He says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of your flesh, which wage war against your soul." You ever paid attention to the seriousness of that language? where Peter says, your soul is being assaulted. There is a flat-out war going on for control of it. Now, as we think about the language that Peter is using, I think it behooves us, first of all, to understand what he's talking about when he talks about the concept of the soul. What exactly does that mean? Well, as we think about this, we actually go back to the very beginning of time as we know it. And as God is involved in this grand creation that we enjoy, he comes to the apex of it where he's creating man. And Moses records for us in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7 that the Lord God formed the man from dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living creature. Nothing else in the creation is described in these terms. I don't know, but it appears that the rest of the creation that had life, the animals, the birds and such, that they were created fully formed and functioning, no breathing into their nostrils. But for man, it was very different. Man is created from the earth to show him to be a part of this earth. But he's given the breath of God to show that he's something far better than just simply a part of this earth. And thus, when you look up the definition of soul, you come across language that reminds us of Genesis chapter 2. You look up the definition of soul and you might find the term God breathed. Or you might find the term life. Or you might find the term seed of passion. And all of these things are directing us back to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7, where God is saying, when I formed you, man, I made you something different than the rest of the creation. When I formed you, I gave you a sense of being like me. And thus, as you and I think about this soul that's being assaulted, we understand that God created this soul for a purpose, and that purpose is to be like Him, and not only the purpose of being like Him, but also to eternally be with Him. I want to take you for a little stroll down some things that we've studied in the past for just a minute. You remember this passage well, I hope. This was our theme passage from last year as we talked about it, where Peter says his divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us out of His own glory and excellence, by which He has granted us this precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature. That's why we were created. God said, the reason I breathed my life into you and gave you this eternal nature and gave you life and this seed of passion is so that you could use that to be like me. Going back further, several years ago now, we had this as our theme. But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, since it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. God says, I want you to be like me. I've created you with a divine purpose. I've created you to be a holy being so that this soul is not corrupted by the things of this life. But perhaps greatest of all is when we think about in the creation of our soul that God created us to share in His love. The love that was known to Father, Son, and Spirit for eternity. God says, I want to make known to you. And thus, when He breathed into our nostrils the breath of life, He said to us, I am giving you my love, but I'm also giving you the opportunity to return that love. And thus, when we think about what He's given, we are created with a choice, because if we had no choice, there would be no showing of genuine love. If this was a forced action where you and I had no choice but what to love God, that would not be love at all. But as that love freely given, so we too have the opportunity and the choice to return that love to God. And thus our soul is a gift of God, to be like God, and to love God by making the choice to do that very thing. But back to the battle. Though God has created this soul, the choice is always there. Though God created us with purpose, though God created us with love, in that choice, we can turn against Him. And thus, once again, the words of Peter, the war that's waging. Because the desire of the devil and his forces is to remove that soul from the care of God. Not because God can't hang on to it, but to convince us that the other side is better. How strong is that? Let's go back to the passages that we looked at just a minute ago. As you think in 2 Peter chapter 1, where we talked about the divine power and what He's granted to us to give us these great promises that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature, we continue on when Peter says, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. Listen to what Peter's saying. He's saying that when you make the choice in your life to obey God, to allow God to control your soul, what you're doing is you're escaping away from those things that desire to kill you, to desire to have that corrupting influence on the soul. We think also about what Peter said when he said, "We were created for holiness. You shall be holy." Listen to how he starts that. He says, as obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance. Don't go back in the ways of the world. Don't return to those things that were destructive to the soul. So what's Peter telling us in all three of these passages? There is a war that will corrupt you, and this corruption is wanting you back once you've left. And so as we think about that, the question then comes to us. What is this corrupting influence? What is this flesh that's waging war against our souls? We read that quite often in the New Testament. And I want us to go to the book of Colossians to get a picture of this. And as we think about Colossians chapter 3, listen to what Paul says in verse 5. He says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. And he follows that with a very similar list that we find in the book of Galatians when he says sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. So we begin to see a picture. And when we ask ourselves the question, what is this flesh that's waging war against me? The apostle says, it's what's earthly in you. The New Living Translation is not a translation that I would go to quite often. But I want you to listen to how they translate this passage. So, put to death the sinful, earthly things lurking within you. I think in this instance, they got it. We think about all of these things that are fighting, all of these things that are trying to control us, that are lurking within us, looking for the opportunity to express themselves, to declare that open war, and to make us choose to leave the side of God. So what then is the flesh that's waging war against our soul? It's the absence of what is heavenly. It's the absence of everything God is. It's the absence of what He created us for in this purpose. And so flesh then is not living according to our divine calling. The flesh is living unholy so as not to be holy as God is holy. And it's living much more in the animalistic nature of the rest of creation. We don't hold the animal world to many standards, do we? You think about an old tomcat that visits every house on the block, we just say, well, that's his nature. You think about a bear that maybe catches some kind of prey and eats that prey, we think, well, that's just being a bear. You think about the lion that waits an attack on the poor gazelle that's coming by, well, that's just being a lion. But when we allow the flesh to win, we start describing ourselves in those terms. That's just the way we are as a fleshly being that's given up our divine hope, that's given up our calling, and looking more like the animal world than a thinking, reasoning, rational, choosing being. And thus Paul says, when you choose that, it's going to become very evident in your life. That when you choose the kind of lifestyle that completely gives away God and does not seek to be like Him, these are the things that are going to be evident in your life. And note how he ends the verse. He says, this isn't it, but it's everything like this. So the question for us is this. Is that really what we want in control? Kind of like the eclipse, are we looking forward to the darkness of sexual immorality? Are we looking forward to the drunkenness that comes with alcohol and drugs? Are we enjoying the jealousies and the rivalries and chewing people out who disagree with us? Paul says, well, if you do, you've given your life to the flesh. But he says, you have such a better choice. That what you can do is not to choose the darkness of the flesh, but to choose life that comes by the Spirit. In Galatians chapter 5, where we were reading earlier, Paul makes this point when he says, if we live by the Spirit, if that's what we are, and that's who we've given control, then we better be walking in the ways of the Spirit. That if you and I are choosing the ways of God, if you and I are choosing His ways above ours, it means putting on the qualities that are seen in Him. And it's not those works of the flesh that are going to be a part of us. We're not going to be described as drunkards and envious and jealous and bitter. No, we're going to be described as people of love and joy and peace and patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Because every one of these qualities is a quality of God. Every one of the things Paul says is fruit of the Spirit is going to be seen when we are partakers of the divine nature. It's going to be seen when we are holy as He is holy. And thus Paul quite literally puts it in black and white for us when he says, when you look at your life, you can observe the fruit that it's producing and you can know which side you're on. There is no doubt about it, because if you are on God's side, these are the things that are going to be characteristic. And thus we are refraining from those earthly things that are seeking and lurking to control us. So, as we think about flesh and its desire for control, we think about the Spirit and the ways of God, and we understand that there is a desire for control there as well. Listen to what Paul says just a few verses earlier in verse 17. When he says, "For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh, for these are opposed to each other, to keep you from doing the things you want to do." I want you to listen to that verse. Paul says you got desire of the flesh on one side, you got the desire of the Spirit on the other, and there is no middle ground. There is no merging. There's no being this godly guy who's a pretty good worldly guy too. There's not a worldly guy who can put on his Christian hat on Sunday and everything's okay. It's one way or the other. And Paul says there is a fight going on between them every day in your soul. So the question is, who's going to win? Because when you and I give way to the flesh, we're giving way to death. Very similar passage we find over in the book of Romans, chapter 13 and verse 14, when he says, when you live according to the flesh, you will die. Listen to the emphatic nature, but listen also to the plainness of the language. If you are giving way to these things, you'll die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you'll live. When you allow God to win in your life, that's when life is going to come. Listen to what else Paul tells us when he says that if you live with out of step with the Spirit, that you're showing hostility to God. Again, book of Romans chapter 8 and verse 7. For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God. For it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. If my life is motivated by flesh, if my life is motivated by the things of the earth lurking within me, I don't have room for God. And God certainly is not going to take second place. So then, with all of this said, perhaps the question for us is, when is that choice going to be made? That we make the decision, yes, between flesh and spirit. When does that happen? When is it going to take place? Well, let me tell you, initially, it's going to take place in baptism. And everyone, ultimately, is going to make a decision of who's in control. Let's think about that from Romans chapter 8 and verse 5. Where he says, for those who live according to the flesh, set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. So here we are, and we're given this choice, and that choice is going to bring us to a decision. And that decision is going to be made when we decide whether or not baptism is important for us. How do I know that? Well, the Apostle Paul tells me. Going back to the book of Colossians once again, to chapter 3 and verse 1. And the apostle here says, if then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above. That's the fruit of the Spirit, the love, joy, peace, long-suffering. Where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. The apostle says that seeking is going to occur when we've been raised with Him. Well, when does that raising take place? Well, we simply back up into chapter 2, which of course would not have been chapter 2 in their letter, because this is a continuing thought. And I pick up here with verses 12 and 13 of chapter 2, and the apostle says, having been buried with him in baptism. Having been buried with him in baptism. Well, what's going on, Paul? In which, referring back to that, you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. The apostle says, okay, when is this choice going to be made? It's when you're raised with Christ. Paul, when does that raising take place? It's when you're buried with him. When you're raised up because of your faith that you show in God, that in going down in the waters of baptism, you believe, you trust, you've got faith, that it's at that instant that God has said, I will remove your sins. The old man of sin is killed away as the burial takes place with Christ. And we're raised up clean and new and whole and ready to stay in step with the Spirit. It's a beautiful picture. And it's an important picture. Let me say this, that while that choice is made initially at baptism, the choice does not end with baptism. I'll just tell you, I like monster movies a lot. Not the new ones with all the blood and guts, but the old ones where the monster was actually kind of scary. You know, a lot of times in these scary movies, finally, the monster is killed off, and you can breathe a sigh of relief. But just as sure as the pretty young starlet opens the door, there he is again. He has his horrible habit of coming back to life. And so, every time you think everything's okay, there he is back again. That's the flesh. That if you give the monster an inch, he's going to take a mile. And thus, the New Testament is chock full of warnings. Don't give an inch. Listen to what the writers tell us as they talk about the flesh seeking to continue that control. Listen to them as they tell us that life here is a battle against the flesh. And if any of us fall prey to the notion that when I come up out of the waters of baptism, it doesn't matter what I do, it doesn't matter how I live, because my soul is never in jeopardy after that, I will assure you, you have not done a close enough reading of the New Testament. And the warnings that the writers give to stay holy and to remember your calling and to think about being partakers of the divine nature and not give in to the flesh. Interesting passage that we find is actually one that Paul writes to the Corinthians. He says in chapter 10, verses 2 through 5, I beg of you that when I am present, I may not have to show boldness with such confidence as I count on showing against some who suspect us of walking according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh, here using flesh in the sense of our life. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh or of the earth, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. Now listen to what he says. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and every thought captive to obey Christ. Listen to that. Paul says that every thought he has, he keeps it in the confines of obedience to Christ. He doesn't let it go any further. Because the Apostle Paul knew that if you give the flesh an inch, it'll take you over. The things we're talking about this morning are serious. Whether you're young, whether you're old, God is saying to us that we must make sure that even if this world that we're living in is out of step with Him, that we remain in step with what He said to do. Let me say this as a counterbalance. The good news is, God has said He'll help us every step of the way. The better news is, God has said, I understand who you are. I understand your dust. I understand you're like the grass of the field. The best news is when God understands this and knows that His people are going to mess up from time to time, He doesn't write us off. But He says, come back and let me help you. Walk with me. And though it may be difficult at times and challenging at times, I'm going to help you in that walk. And if we believe that, and if we practice that, we very much will remain in step with Him. So the question comes down to this: which way are we walking? Are we walking after the evil ways of the flesh, or are we walking in the good ways of the Spirit? Are we doing the works of the flesh, or are we bearing the fruit of the Spirit? That's the question. And when I look at my life, I can know the answer to that. And if I look at those things, and if I understand that my walk is not the way it ought to be going, God says, I'm here. And I'm ready, and I'm able, and I'm willing. And that may very well mean this morning that you've never surrendered to Him in baptism. Baptism's not magic. Nothing spectacular in the water. It's in the promise of God. That God has said it's here that you're buried with Christ to be raised up, to walk in His ways new. You ready to do that this morning? If you understand that, you understand what it means to become a Christian. Or maybe you've allowed the flesh to control your life. You've allowed the flesh to come in and to seize you once again, but you're ready to come back to the side of God. This morning, if we can pray with you about it, we'll do that. We'll not go as your judges to the throne of God, but as fellow citizens of this kingdom who fully understand what it means. And every one of us, down to the very last Christian in the room, has struggled and lost battles with the flesh. Whatever it takes this morning, let's make sure we're on the right side, that we are in step with the ways of God, And though the world is dark around us, we're the light in which the glory of God is being shined through us.